three of us were media makers before any media, and we kind of followed any media, and we kept making media, and maybe we were thinking, like, we could each talk about, like, the ways in which any media influence our practice or craft or whatever. Do you guys still think that's a good kind of place to launch from? So I guess I'll start. I just wanted to give a little background on my path. I come from like a electronic art background when I was making video art before I got into like video journalism, and I was making, you know, kind of video collages that were political, but I didn't really consider myself an activist. And then in 2002, in the lead up to the Iraq War, I was in Portland and I got kind of radicalized by what was happening there. And I realized, like, well, I have this camera that I just used to, like, appropriate footage and turn into art collage. I could also use it to go out on the street and film what's going on. And then I got, you know, I met, like, Portland media people and just changed my whole kind of focus from art to, like, citizen journalism. And then went on to make some documentaries. I made a film about the murdered women of Juarez and several projects about the border. And so, you know, it really, like, made me take a considerably different turn in my career as a media maker. And I've since, like, kind of gradually drifted back into making more artistic stuff. But I'm always trying to find, like, a kind of happy medium between, you know, documenting, you know, telling real stories, and also, like, putting it into a aesthetically interesting package that that is going to, like, grab people. And I've experimented with a lot of different ways of trying to do that. So that's basically where I have come from. And I just should add that, like, newsreel and, like, documentary making in general is, like, it's kind of like a collage practice anyway. I've always looked at it that way, especially the kind of collaborative processes that a lot of media productions involve. Like, the Prague video is, like, a great example of how incredibly distributed and collaborative a lot of these projects were. When I had the subtitles made for my Juarez film, there used to be a translations collective, translations out of the media directory, and I used that, and people all over the world helped me translate the Spanish into English and the English into Spanish, and that's just, like, incredible that even existed, and it was mind-blowing to, like, to be making media in that way, and it continues to inform the way I look at media, the power of media, and the power of art. I see the two intertwined.
Yeah, so I was also making a lot of video art. I was a club DJ, and I bought into this idea that I could, you know, send subversive messages to people and actually change them. So I did a bunch of raves and clubs and you know, some independent documentary work. And when the planes hit the World Trade Center in New York City in 2001, something clicked in my head, and I said, like, I have to do. I can't just, like, be like, you know, DJing at clubs every fucking night and getting drunk and smoking cigarettes and all that. And so I started videotaping the anti-war movement that was growing in Atlanta at the time, And through that, I met folks at Indie Media. And I do remember the moment where just something in my head just kind of completely changed. And it was watching Breaking the Spell. And I think that the one thing that film did for me, it was an Indie Media screening in Atlanta. The one thing that it did for me is it certainly broke the spell insofar as it celebrated people who were doing things that, you know, never in the media had I seen it celebrated in such a way. And I said, like, this is the type of stuff that I want to do. Like, that was, and, you know, from that moment on, like, my shit just changed forever. And so I think that's, I mean, if indie media really, like, made everything possible in my head so that I would destroy any sort of chances of a career and just dedicate myself to, like, making some of the stuff that you saw on the screen. And it's been awesome. But I think one of the things that I really appreciated about the INC is this idea of copyleft. Some people would embrace more the term like anti-copyright, or this idea that media doesn't really belong to anybody. And as somebody who was VJing, you know, like I used to already appropriate a bunch of video, going to video stores, making copies, making little digital clips on my computer so that I could project them. And I always felt like a bit of an outlaw, like doing that type of shit, even though like the chances that I was ever going to be busted for doing that stuff were very, very, very low. But at the IMC, not only was this idea, these like sort of very libertarian ideas of property just completely changed the way I looked at media, also with the free software movement as well, that, you know, you could show up to a convergence space and there would be like a shared hard drive and everybody just dumped their footage there. That for me was incredible, you know, that, and I think that, I mean, I feel a little bit old. I thought that those ideas of anti-copyright had sort of transcended the IMC, but they unfortunately did not. And I showed a clip of the film I did about the Quebec student strike. And there's so many fucking filmmakers in Montreal. It's like that there was a lot of footage of that strike. And so when I was making it, I was like contacting a lot of folks, and a lot of folks were not down to share their footage. And I was like, well, fuck you, it's already online, so I'm gonna use it anyway. I think one of the things that have been lost is this idea that everybody's just trying to create their own little brand, and you know, there's not like this idea like we're all making media sort of for the greater good. So that's one of the things that I would like to see sort of be brought back. Oh, and I also want to say thanks to you both, because I had not seen Prague and I had not seen the episodes of Newsreel that you showed, and I just really hope that these things are stored somewhere online and that we don't lose them forever.
Well, the Prague film, you know, had always, I printed 500 copies when we got it done and kind of distributed them to different members of the collective, and it never got digitized. It was kind of in that weird limbo period where it wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't easy to just digitize something and throw it up in space. So, like, Tish actually just digitized it now, so it will be online for the first time ever. Yeah. And I guess, you know, for me, I was part of that counter-media gang in 96, and I had the, I guess, fortunate experience of being the first arrest during that. It was at a abortion, anti-abortion protest, and I was grabbed, and you know, they pulled me off, and I had my camera, and I went to jail immediately. And because of that little collective, they were able to go, let's call the press and tell them that one of our reporters had been arrested, or a reporter has been arrested. And so that happened, and some big news media were calling the police department, and really quickly they got rid of me from the police department. And they didn't like that. And I think it was my first, even though I've been shooting video since like 1983, it was the first time that I felt the power of the media and the camera, And the idea, especially in Prague, where you're really starting to feel the presence of these cameras around changed the dynamic of what was going on in the street. If I had a choice between a brick and a camera to go into a riot, I'd definitely choose a camera, even if there was no film in it, because it provides this ultra layer of protection for the group, in theory. Not that plays out in practice, but in theory, if a cop knows he's on camera, he's less likely to do something. So Prague was really the first time where I saw that in action, culminating in those beautiful pink ladies marching the police up the hill. So I guess that's all I'll say about that. I too agree with the collaborative process, how magical that was. And I think we were in that period of time where you couldn't do it yourself, so you had to collaborate. And now we can do it ourselves. You can go to any place you want and have a whole thing done by the time you leave the protest, if you're really doing your thumb piano. And so I spent the last, a couple weeks ago watching Hong Kong as well as I could through the lens of, okay, let's see where indie media or let's see where independent media has gotten to. And I could watch four screens with three screens in each one of live streams that were happening at any given moment. And they had made this amazing app that you can download free hk.tv, and it just scans for any Facebook stream that's, I guess, hashtagged with this thing. And so there can be, 100 streams that you can search through that's live at any given protest. I don't know what is being done to archive any of that. I don't know how it was used beyond that, but it was sure crazy watching. And so what I saw was that there was no one doing a meta commentary on that. So except there were a couple. One guy by the name of Chili Lucas, if you want to look him up on YouTube, was born in Chile, a young guy, and he was in Hong Kong. So he would restream these streams and kind of pick them out and do a commentary over it. Not only was he translating what was going on in the streets and what the police were doing, but he was bringing up a Google map and satellite views, and here's this university, and here's that, and here's the history of this thing, and as the riot was happening, to really give the viewer context. Plus, you had this chat window moderated that, I could, in Wisconsin, go, hey, could you tell me where that university that they just showed was in relation to where this bridge is being taken over? And he would immediately pull up a map on Google, and whoever was watching it would be able to kind of get that commentary and those live questions going into someone who was able to answer them. Was just amazing. And I was amazed that not many people were taking that next step of, like, taking all that data, all those streams, and restreaming it and doing a meta commentary. So it intrigued me to the point where I really want to explore who's doing that kind of thing and doing it. Open up the question.
Any questions, comments?
I know there's a lot of you out there that also have been involved in video projects, so feel free to jump in with your experiences.
I have a couple questions. I'm curious what happens in the field, where is it at, where all the videos and their archives, or what came of that project with all your work. And two, I know about the Frank Burford, does the Prague video get out much? Were there a lot of screenings of that? I remember seeing it, but I don't know if it got out very much. Much discussion about the video.
With Newsreel, unfortunately, at some point in 2009, I had a hard drive crash, and it was before I really had a consistent backup scheme, and so I lost all the assets, the interstitials and buffers and stuff. And it was right before I was about to hand it off to a new editor, a guy in Wyoming who had volunteered, and because I had been kind of burning out, and so. It unfortunately just kind of stopped at that point. and also like contributions had really been tapering off. I think possibly because of, well, like the overall kind of tapering off of indie media activity, and also like the easy ability to like upload stuff to YouTube and other platforms. So there was like less, I guess, awareness that like it was important to, and like this was actual TV, like it showed on satellite TV all over the country and public access. But I think people maybe started seeing that as like less important or something. In terms of like the archives, I have everything on DVD, and like in preparation for this weekend, I've been like going through it all and going down memory lane and ripping the DVDs, and I'm planning to like, I mean, now thinking about it and like talking to the XFR folks, I've come to realize how important it is to like get some higher quality archives up. So I'll probably be, you know, gradually putting those on archive.org or that sort of thing.
I work for this Blackout Media, and I also contributed to Newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so Blackout Media was a project that was originally the New York City Media Newsroom project for public access on the internet.
Yeah, I remember you sending stuff in.
And then we named Blackout Media, which was up for Free Speech TV show. We did 50 or 60 episodes as a weekly volunteer into public access. I think those archives are in my mother-in-law's house. But I was actually trying to look because I saw the co-op from the show, so I felt we had like 50 or 60 shows. I mean, it really, you gotta get our shit together.
Well,
I mean, now I have that together. You know, now everything, since it's all digital, you know, you get a drive and you copy that drive and you copy that drive. But it's
yeah.
Really like, we really, we
yeah.
Need to talk a little more. I mean, I couldn't bring the space because it's digitized here.
I was kind of hoping somebody for Free Speech TV, like Eric Galatis, would. I've been here this weekend. I'm curious, like what they do with all their submissions and tapes that we send to the neighbors. There's like a room with a shelf. Or,
yeah. And in terms of the prog film, it was like I said, we kind of distributed it out to different IMCs and different people in the collective that was working on it, and then it just kind of. Was that, you know, I wasn't in the city to sort of actively promote it and screen it, so.
In terms of satellite TV, so the main, I think, that thing of that Free Speech was doing, especially in the early 2000s or mid-2000s, was distributing to public access stations. So
yep.
It wasn't just on the satellite. Also on a lot of community media stations who would have free time would just flip over to Free Speech TV. There was a program that I was involved with that actually gave dishes and recorders or something to the station so
yeah.
They would have that facility. It started out to play Democracy Now! But they used it for a lot of other things.
Yeah, and I should also give a shout out to Pepper Spray Productions in Seattle. They were part of the newsreel effort. They would copies would get sent to them, and they would distribute. They would like dub and distribute copies to subscribers. So like different public access stations and any media collectives would give them like $6 a month or something, and they would send out newsreel to them too. So there were a lot of other ways people got to see it, like local screenings that different collectives put on.
It's similar. I have some of the newsreel tapes, and then I didn't even know how I got them, but I have them on the same shelf, and it's actually the same font on the label of the VHS for Undercurrents. Were you much in touch with Undercurrents at all, or you know?
Oh, in England?
Yeah.
No.
Because it's
no,
very similar. I mean,
yeah.
They were doing, I think, a monthly
yeah.
kind of
was really wishing I had copies of stuff from before I was editor. I could only find a few, like stuff that, like I was contributing to it for a few years before I was involved with editing. What's that?
We used to screen them in North Carolina too.
Cool.
And that was before I think that was before I was in New York.
Let's coalesce on these.
On that note, we kind of want to wind down the conversation so that it's about 6:30 actually. So maybe if Francine, if you have another comment, we can kind of wind down the comments and then like make time for us to eat dinner. Around 7-ish is when we were originally going to start the movie, so folks are going to start showing up for that too. We want to make time for projections to dinner also. So maybe you can wind down this last comment.
Inspiring to watch all the films, and I don't know, it's just re-inspired me. And I wanted to ask Frank about, I didn't really know about this person, TV, and I'm just curious how you do it yourself, and how you get the kind of
Yeah, so I did it by myself for many years, the different footage, it just depended on the situation. Like if I went to a conversion space, there would usually be the shared hard drive that we could all pull from. But for the most part, especially for It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine, it's been like sort of magical time for doing video mashups, just because the internet sort of affords us nice Firefox plugins that allow you to download from many different areas. I shot a little clip of George Bush Don't Like Black People. I did that in 2005, right after the hurricane. And you know how I did that particular one just was my friend had a TiVo, and I had him like record every single newscast, and then we figured out a way to extract the file from the TiVo and put it in a Mac. Nowadays, it's just so much more easier than that, and keyword searches on, I mean, I'm pretty lazy now, and YouTube has everything, and you can download all the way up to 4K, and it's just, I mean, if you're into doing mashups and stuff like that, there's multiple applications. ClipGrab is a really good one. It's a website called genyoutube.com that downloads everything, and then just download it, throw it in Final Cut, and that's it. Well, I guess we're gonna go eat. Thanks, everybody.
For one more quick remark I have, just a little anecdote. I'm reading this incredible book right now called Fantasyland, and it's the history of the U.S. starting before even colonization, but talking about the kind of like the ways in which this country's always been sort of a place where there's a fuzzy outlook on what the truth is, and people believe whatever they want to believe, and so you know we're now in this time where that's come to like an apex. But there was one thing about this that he was talking about in the '60s that in 1969 and 1970 there were over 100 bombings, and we hear about the weathermen and like a couple other like terrorist militants, but he made the point that like people mostly didn't hear about, you know, they might have heard about like 2 out of those 100 bombings because the media was like confined to this really narrow set of companies, and they made sure that people didn't know about it because they knew like people would just go crazy if they found out like there's actually terrorist bombings in our country, and it's just interesting to think about, you know, like if that was happening now, everybody would know about it, and they'd be talking about it on Twitter 24 hours a day, and it would be very different. I guess I just wanted to throw that out there.